just to say a little bit more about the topic of Achsonai, really, let's say, to focus on two open questions to try to close off our discussion with Sugya. So first of all, we had discussed a little bit the machlokas about whether this concept of hishtadfus bepruta that works for the Achsonai, so does it work as well in other maybe comparable situations, such as, let's say, if you have two people who have equal ownership or roommates, whatever it is, and to have one of them light the menorah and the other one be mishtatif bepruta, is that also an effective approach? And here the Bir Halacha, Mishneh Berurah, quotes a machlokus about this, machlokus between the Levush who thought it should work, but maybe there's a hider to light on your own, but theoretically it should work, and the Pri Chadash who disagreed. And it's a little strange, the truth is this is an issue which really discussed in the Rishonim. And the Ritva, which I added on today's list, if you got a chance to see that. And the Tur really quotes the view as well from others that was more inclined to be lenient towards this, that in theory it should work, that this Hishtadfus should allow the menorah to count for both parties here. So it's an interesting question why it shouldn't work. What exactly is the issue? As we discussed last time, it does seem to be a little bit hard to explain why that shouldn't be effective. And there is a analysis of this in the Sefer that we've mentioned a few times in the past, Yerucham Olshin's Sefer Yereach L'Mo'adim, where he thinks that the issue is as follows. So it goes back to the question, the primary question of what exactly is the chiddush of the whole concept of Achsonai, and what exactly are we trying to accomplish with the pruta? And we started to say this point as well, that we saw it's a machlokus, the Ran and the Rush, as to what the chiddush of Achsonai is, right? What are the possibilities? But according to the Rush, what's the chiddush here?
That one, you're not
right, you're not yotze with him unless you're mishtatev. And according to the Ran, it comes from a slightly different direction, that you could have thought that, what? You could have thought that you don't have a bias, you should be potter. So as we started to ask the other day, what's the maskana of the Ran? Right, the whole chovas ha-bias, chovas ha-gavar question, which is kind of an open issue in the Rishonim. So what does the Ran say? And the Ran's conclusion is, oh, you need to know about the din of Achsonai because you could have thought that Chanukah is a chovas ha-bias and you're off the hook if you don't have your bias. And kamash malan that something. Kamash malan that what? What's the chiddush then? So what's not true? Which part of the sentence is not true? That it's not a chovas ha-bias or that it's not, you're not off the hook?
Okay.
Could be either one, right? It's not clear. So he assumes that the conclusion really is that you're not off the hook. That yes, it's true it's a chovas ha-bayis, but Chazal still didn't want you to get off with nothing. So Chazal said that even in the situation of Achsonai, you have to be mishtatev. You have to have some level of obligation. You shouldn't be completely separated from this whole thing. And to the Rush, the chiddush was coming from a different direction. The Rush seemed to assume that you're chayiv. And just said that the only surprise here is that the balabas is not enough. So if that's the case, it comes out that the Rush seems to hold it's a chovas ha-gavra, and it seems to hold that you have an achiyuv no matter what. And the Ran thought there was reason to say there's no achiyuv, and the chiddush is that Chazal placed the achiyuv on you as well in that case. So if that's true, and you could quibble a little bit, but it's on pretty solid ground, so then it would come out that the Rush holds it's a Chovas HaGavra, and the Ran holds it is a Chovas HaBayis. So then, to take it to the next step, so then it would come out that according to the, let's say, the Levush, that you can be Yotze even with two roommates, two Balabatim, can be Yotze with one menorah. So that works more according to the Rush, that basically it's a Chovas HaGavra, and everyone has their own Chiyud. And they're able to be Yotze this way through Hishtadfus Bepruta. So it's a Chiddush that should extend to this as well. While if you say that this logic does not extend to the roommates, so then what you're basically saying is that really it's a chovas habayis. And in the case of the achsanoi, Chazal made a special chiyuv and a special way to fulfill the chiyuv with pruta. But it shouldn't necessarily extend to anything else. And therefore we don't necessarily have the basis to say that it also applies, it also satisfies the requirement of two shared balabat. Does that make sense? So far so good? He then goes on to think that this may also affect another question that we spoke about. The question of, is there an option for the achsanai to light on his own? If the achsanai has the ability to be mishtatif bebruta, so should we also let him light on his own? So the tour has the language, you have to be medayik in it, but the language of the tour is that, let me put it on the Marmar Kumbis again because these statements are already both there, but you have to pay closer attention. So the tour says that if you light, if the achsanoi is mishtatif bepruta, that's enough. Which makes it sound like you could do more if you wanted. You could choose to light. But it's sufficient to have Hishtarfis Bepruta. And the Rambam doesn't really indicate any other such option. He just says, Mishtatif Yimon Dishim. It doesn't talk about there any possibility of there being anything more. As we mentioned the other day, that there were Achronim such as Rav Soloveitchik who maintained that view, that there isn't really an option for the Areach, for the Achsanoi, to do anything more than Ishtatvas Peshamet. So if this is indeed a Machlokas, and just so you're aware, there's a different Machlokas, which I'm not really addressing here, about the question of somebody whose wife is lighting for him at home, and he still decides he wants to light on his own. Does he have the right to do that? So that's a separate question, which connects to this, but I'm not addressing that right now. Here, the question of this Oreach, so does he have the ability to light on his own or not? So that was apparently a machlokas, the Tur and the Rambam, if one assumes being read correctly. So he thought that this is essentially the same issue, that according to the Tur, it's really a chovas hagavra, it's a personal obligation. So you could fulfill the obligation through joining in with the balabas, that's the chiddush of achsanai, and Ishtarfus Bepruta. And keep in mind, the Tur is following his father, right? His father, the Rush, who we associated with a Chovas Hagavra position. So the Tur will maintain, okay, so yes, it's a personal obligation, and you can fulfill it through Pruta, and you could also do more, you could also light your own candles. But according to the Rambam, it's a Chovas Habayis, and that's what we've seen so far in other discussions, when we talked about Chovas Habayis, Chovas Hagavra. We saw that the Rambam has the language, right, remember the Rambam's language, that they made a chiyuv al kol bayis v'bayis. Right, that's a perek dalet halacha, well, that's actually in a couple places. But the language of kol bayis v'bayis is part of the chiyuv, as the formulation of the chiyuv, that's the way the Rambam writes it. And many have understood from there that the Rambam holds it is a chovas habayis. So it's a chovas habayis, maybe your only option is to connect with this bayis and let the balabas light for you, and that's how it's going to essentially come out. And this, while we're just tying all these things together, so this could also reflect back on our famous Mahadran and a Mahadran issue between the Rambam and the Ramah, which always resurfaces. They did a lot for Lumdus by arguing on that point, by having that nuanced distinction between the Rambam and the Ramah that keeps coming back to provide more and more Lumdus. So the Rambam's position that in terms of the Mahadran, that everyone lights, with the Balabayas lights on behalf of everyone, and the Ramah's variation, that every individual lights his own menorah, so he suggests, as many have, that it's the same question, that essentially the Rambam, L'shutaso, sees it as a Chovas Habayis. So the Hiddur of Kol Echad Yechad is that the household should have candles per person. And the Ramah sees it as a chovas hagavra, as a personal obligation, which you could theoretically be yotze on your behalf through the balabayas, But it's better for you to do it yourself. That's a hiddur, do it yourself, because it is a personal obligation in the first place. So it comes out that that's maybe the Rambam's consistent view, that it's really a chovas habayis, so therefore we should have the balabas lighting all the candles. Therefore, in the situation of Ach Sinai, it's not really an option for you to light it on your own. And therefore, as well, the whole concept of Ach Sinai is understood in this way as manifesting that notion. Okay, so that's really step one, or issue one within Ach Sinai that I wanted to take a little further. The second issue, which we also started discussing the other day, is the very major question of what exactly is it that you are buying? What exactly is it that you are buying into? What does this ishtatfus do? So we mentioned that there seems to, we had a couple of theories the other day, but the two theories that seemed the most viable were, on the one hand, the shemen, and on the other hand, possibly the bias itself. And we saw that shemen has the most support in the Rishonim, and that you find that explicitly stated by some of them. I added to the list this morning the Bach. The Bach who writes that when the Balabas lights, so you don't even necessarily have to be standing there, he says, he uses the phrase that the Iker is that it should be lit from Mamono, that his property should be expressing this mitzvah, and therefore apparently his understanding of Hishtadfus Bepruta is that you're buying into the oil and the oil will light for you, so to speak. Hi.
So you're not buying into the mitzvah.
You're buying, right, that doesn't seem to be the way it's understood, although hold off on that thought. You know, so far what we see, when we finish we'll see if that's the way you understand it. But so far the Rishonim seem to say more it's about buying into the oil, and
it's
that
like a mechanism towards the mitzvah.
Correct, right? No, that's clearly what's happened. The question is, how does it happen in between? What's getting us there? So you could say that it's about buying the oil, and others said differently. So we mentioned that Rabbi Shlomo Zalman Orbach and Rabbi Bleich, we mentioned in the past in other contexts, understood that it's about buying into the house itself. Rav Asher Weiss also likes this approach in his Sefer, and he thinks that this explains why it is that we have some relationship in Shulchan Aruch between this and Neiru Shabbos. That if Neiru Shabbos also has a concept of Hishtafis Bepruta, so there it's not really about that there's any din in Shabbos that your light should be used for something. There, it's clearly a practical goal that you should have light where you are. So to that extent, maybe there's a comparison to be drawn between Neir Shabbos and Neir Hanukkah. And that's what's going on with both of them. There's a concept of Hishtadfus Bepruta in order for you to kind of buy into the environment, so to speak. Now some of this was mentioned to respond to a question that the Acharonim have, that if you're buying the oil, so how does that kinyan work? Right? We explained the issue on Monday, that normally we have a rule that movable property, that metaltalin, is not acquired through paying money. If you pay money towards something, that does not give you ownership of a movable item, which we explained is likely a takana d'rabbanan, because we're afraid that the seller will give up all desire to protect the item if he's already transferred it to you and it's still in his property. And if he has a fire or something, he's not going to work to defend it, so we decide that we're not going to actually transfer it until he does physically transfer it. So then the question becomes, so how could giving money acquire property that's a movable item? So there were a couple of approaches. We didn't flesh them out so much, just to say a little bit more detail about them. One approach that we did mention is there are indications, for example, the Ramah, in one place, I put this on the Mar Makomos, it's in the Choshev Mishpat, in Kuf Tzadik Tes, indicates that we don't necessarily insist on this Takana D'Rabbanan B'Makom Mitzvah. So if that's the case, maybe that helps. This is a way of participating in a mitzvah, so therefore maybe this Takanas Chazal is not insisted upon. Could be. That's a little bit of a debated point. Yom Lagon and Akiva Eger and others question that. Another possibility, question?
I mean, in this case, you're not actually physically getting the oil. So it's not like he's holding anything back from you. You're sort of, you're buying the oil, but you're not really getting anything. So the whole time, you're getting something.
So I think that there's what to be said about that. And just, that's going to relate to another approach I'll mention in a second. So hold on to that thought for 1 second. I just want to mention another similar point right before coming back to that. Want to say something along those lines? Or?
Similar.
All right, so both hold off on one, but I just want to mention one other similar point. We'll come right back to this. There are those also who suggest, also based on the Rama's language, it's also disputed, that maybe we should view this as if there was a tanaim, that the agreement between the parties, we should assume that called tanaim shalom kaim, that if you have two knowing parties who make an explicit agreement, then that should take effect along those terms. So let's say that here also, that this is considered as if there's a condition, as if there's a tanaim, that the sale should take effect despite not following the rules midrabanan. And that's also a little bit of a debatable point, and that may not fully help us either. And if you're going to say that, then maybe you should say that by every such institution, and therefore all the halachos of lachem and the like can all fall by the wayside. You can say whatever deal we make, that should be viable. It's a little hard to believe. So there is a point which I think is similar to what Stevie says, and I think this could actually be a pretty reasonable approach if you're really motivated by this kasha. And if this is, if Ryan will tell me if this is along the lines of what you wanted to say, but Rav Asher Weiss quotes from the Mikhtavei Torah of the Ger Rebbe that if the whole concern is that we're afraid the seller is not going to take responsibility for it, so Steve was saying, all right, so maybe it should make a difference if you're not actually going to take possession of it anyway. But he also points out that if it's a acquisition b'shutfus, if you're becoming a joint owner with the seller, so why should the seller not be motivated to protect it? It's still his. It's going to be his. So we're just worried that if he leaves ownership, he's not going to care about it anymore. But if he's maintaining his ownership and he's sharing it with you, so he still will be interested, so maybe they never made such a takana. So I think it's a very logical approach, and there are those who still maintain that the takana is made across the board. Although still, you could say maybe it's only made across the board when there's actually a kinyan away from the seller. I think that's an interesting suggestion itself. So if Ryan was at those wrong lines, what do you want to say? So I think it makes sense. But in any event, of Asher Weiss and others, they thought that maybe, you could say differently, Rabbi Bleich has it that he believes it's a Kenyan character. And a Kenyan character, we don't have this whole constitution. So therefore, it's effective on that ground. But others, the way Shlomo Zalman seems to have the language, and even just working within the Rambam, that l'hishtatev is not necessarily the same thing as l'knos. Right? We're not necessarily saying that you have to acquire the property. We're saying that you should join in the process. So maybe this is a buy-in, literally. Right? You're kind of contributing towards the cause. That makes you a shutuf. It doesn't have to be a kinyan in the literal sense. So the idea that there's something lacking in terms of the kinyan of Mos doesn't necessarily have to bother us. It's not about your making a kinyan. It's about your joining in the process. Now, does that work in terms of the Rishonim who talked about Shemin? I think the answer is yes and no. It depends on which language you're focusing on. Because the idea, let's say, for example, the Rambam explicitly mentions Shemen, but you could possibly fit it within his language, because the Rambam's language is "U'mishtatef imohen b'shemen." So maybe he means that you pay towards the oil, and that gives you a shutfus in this whole process, and you're part of it. While the fact that I mentioned a few minutes ago maybe works a little bit less, because if he says that the whole idea is the mitzvah should be performed b'mamono, then maybe that means you have to actually own the shaman. And maybe we're more focused on a kinyan specifically in the shaman. In other words, even if we focus on the shaman, we're not sure if it's a kinyan or a hishtatfus. And maybe those are two different things. So to that end, Rav Asher Weiss notes that there is a Tshuvas HaRashba, which I added on this morning, that the Rashba does use the language as an option of a kinyan. And the poskim in general say that any kinyan that won't be Jews is effective here. So is that a raya against us? What do you think? Probably not, as Russia Weiss points out, because to say that a kinyan is effective is not the same thing as saying this requires a kinyan. We could merely be saying that this is the way you join in the process, and it's really a hishtafus, but a kinyan is also a hishtafus. So if you happen to make a kinyan alternatively, then that could also be effective as the hishtafus. So I think that does make a lot of sense. I think you could also add on a perspective to say a little bit differently, but in a way that's not necessarily contradictory to all of this, but that probably could be consistent with a lot of this. That perhaps the idea is, it's not really that you have to acquire the oil per se, and it's not really you have to acquire the real estate either. But perhaps you could say that really the din of Achsonoi is as follows, that you have to be a member of the household in order to be yotzei with the balabas. And we see that Machsonai is able to consider himself a part of the household because he's there to some degree. Even though it's not really his house, but because he is benefiting in a tafeldik away, a secondary way, from the balabas, so he can be considered a part of that household, at least in theory. However, what makes it different from his normal household? What's the key difference? Why do we even have to come on to the concept of Achsonai? And we saw that there were some question as to when you do have to come on to the concept of Achsonai. Right? It's not that every non-biological arrangement is automatically Achsonai. So what makes some situations Achsonai and some not? So to a certain degree, it has to do with a lack of permanence. Sorry?
The person lives there, though.
If the person lives there, but what's the difference between living there and being an Achsonai?
Permanently or all time.
So right, to some degree of permanence. Right, some degree of establishing residence. So perhaps what the halacha is saying is that yes, you're a part of this household on some level, but there's no indication that the halacha that happens is connected to you because this is not your permanent household. So maybe your halacha should be somewhere else. This is not really identified with you in any specific sense. If I'm going to ask, where's your house? No one's going to suggest it's this temporary lodging.
But so, you have to define temporary, then you have to define temporary.
Right, which we didn't actually get into, but that is sort of an
extension. Temporary could be college dorm, could be my apartment.
Correct, so we have to figure that out, because we didn't really spend so much time. Poskim tend to assume that it means, let's say, less than 30 days. But there's also a suggestion more than that, that if somebody is there for all of Hanukkah, all the 8 days of Hanukkah. So then we view Kol Torah Kula as based on that Hanukkah, because for Hilchos Hanukkah, this is your whole world. Briyas Olam started on Hanukkah. So if somebody's living in the same place for all of Hanukkah, maybe that's already a permanent household. But if somebody's going back and forth, so what is there to identify that he's doing his mitzvah here? So maybe we need two things. We need the possibility to do it there, which happens from his connection to the household. But then we need an actual statement that he's actually doing it here. So maybe the whole role of Hishtafus Vepruta is for you to actualize your possibility of fulfilling the mitzvah here. So if that's the case, it's not so much that you have to acquire property in order to become a member of the household, or in order for the item to be yours. You're already a candidate for this household, and therefore a candidate to be yotzei. But in order for you to activate that fulfillment, as opposed to anywhere else, So you need some type of buy-in, you need to do something in order to make the statement that this is yours. And that's what the Hishtaklus perhaps accomplishes.
How does the Shukuf moment make it more apparent to anybody else?
At least just for yourself.
Just
you have to do something.
Status.
Yeah, you have to do something to indicate at least that you're doing a maisa that connects to you.
So it's not the reward that people think you don't live there.
Correct. Right. If we do, then we have also all kinds of chashad issues, which is a whole separate issue. And there's more to say about Ach Sinai in terms of chashad, as we alluded to the other day. I think what we'll do is we'll save that for discussion in connection with chashad sometime next week. So we'll leave Ach Sinai with that. Just again, those two major issues that we focused on today, which is the question of what exactly is the difference between Ach Sinai and two Balabatim, and how does that connect to the Chovos Habayis, Chovos HaGavra issue? And then the question of what is this whole Man of Hishtaklus Bepruta meant to accomplish, and what does that say about the concept of Ach Sinai? So now with that, we'll try to go ahead a little bit. So if you had a chance to see from this morning's list, so he gave you a few Maor Mekomos about the relatively minor sugya here, in the middle of Chav Gimel Amud Aleph, where the Gemara seems to identify Shemen Zayis as an ideal mitzvah, the mitzvah in a mufchar. So what's interesting to note is that on the one hand you have what seems to be a pretty unambiguous statement in the Gemara that Shemen Zayis is the best. And yet you don't really find this brought the halacha at all. Which is unusual, right? This is kind of an unambiguous halacha here. But it's not quoted by the poskim. The letter you see, the little ches over here, if you look on the side, so the references to Hilchos Shabbos, the references to Rambam Hilchos Shabbos, to Tur Hilchos Shabbos. And the closest that you find is the Ramah. So also on the little letter here it says Taf Reish Ayin Gimel Aleph, but if you look up Taf Reish Ayin Gimel Aleph, you'll find the Ramah. And the Ramah writes that nowadays we have the option also of using wax candles because they have a strong light. Right? It's interesting in general what the Gemara is focusing on, because the Gemara first says that Abaye Mireish Hava Mahader Mar Hamashcha Deshum Shume. He first went for poppy seed oil, Amrahai Mashik Naharu Tve. That one, its light lasts longer. Now, what does it mean its light lasts longer? So Rashi says, Eino Memaher Lichlos Keshemen Zayas. That it seems like it lasts longer than Shemen Zayas, which gets consumed more quickly. So Sfas Emes has a question here that who cares if it gets used quickly? So we'll just ask you to put in more Shemen Zayis. Right? If we have a shear of how long the candle is supposed to light, so if you tell me that it burns up too quickly, so then we'll adjust the shear accordingly. But why should we have any din that says use one oil as opposed to another because of length of usage? So that's an interesting question. But in any case, the next position is that when he heard this idea, he chose to use olive oil because he said that height solul nuharutve, as Rashi explains, solul moyer, it's brighter, it's clearer, it gives a nicer flame. So that preference for Shemen Zayis is understandable, but you don't really find it brought in the poskim at all. And until you get to the Ramah, and the Ramah says that we have a custom to use wax candles because they also have a clear light. And then he says, but there is also an Indian, Ramavchar, to use Shemen Zayis. So you think, okay, so at least he's passing like the Gemara, right? The Rash and the Rambam and the Rif and the Shulchan Aruch didn't bring the Gemara, but at least the Ramah does. But in truth, he doesn't. Why is he not bringing the Gemara? Because if you look in the Ramah, if you had a chance to see it, so he says he's quoting the Kolbo. Quoting from Rishonim. So what do you mean you're quoting from Rishonim? What's the Gemara here? And if you look at the Mishnah Berurah, so he fills it in. He says, yeah, there's still an Indian to use the Shemen Zayis because that's Zecher L'Nes. That the Nes actually happened with Shemen. And then we get into the whole preference of Dumya de Menorah, right? That same idea that we found time and time again, that to some extent we try to model ourselves after the Menorah de Beis HaMikdash. And you might recall I mentioned an idea, I think, last week of someone who suggested that we clearly have some halachas like the Menorah and some halachas that aren't like the Menorah of the Beis HaMikdash. And apparently we have some type of compromise here, that on the one hand we want it to be like the Menorah of the Beis HaMikdash, on the other hand we have Pursumei Nisa as a strong consideration. So we want to try to balance it, whatever we can do that will have the most Pursumei Nisa while still maintaining a patterning after the Beis HaMikdash, that's also good. So in any event, so here the Ramah, when he brings this concept, he brings this unambiguous statement to the Gemara, undisputed statement in the Gemara, so he's the only one who brings it, and he brings it for really a different reason. And the Gemara says, because of the clear light, and he says, the way the Mishnah Berurah understands, he quotes from the Kolbo, that it's because of Zeich HaLenes, which is an idea that Meiri also brings out in this Gemara. So what's going on here? So in one sefer they just pointed out, it's probably true. Let's look carefully at the Gemara. Right? Does the Gemara actually say there's a mitzvah min amuvcher to use shemen zayis? Look closely at the language. Does it? Right, so what's the language of the Gemara? Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, kol hashmanin kulan yofin lener b'shemen zayis min hamuvcher. So what's he saying?
Better
in what sense? In a halachic sense?
One of the better ones.
But is he saying in a halachic sense, or is he giving you good advice?
In terms of like,
so that's the question. Is it hidden mitzvah in the technical sense, or is he just saying, oh, you want to know what's good for lighting candles? Shemen Zayis is good for lighting candles, and all the shmonim work, but Shemen Zayis is mina mufchar, is the nicest light.
Well, the first part seems to be talking halachically, so the second part... It's not such a stretch to say that it is.
Is it? Is the first part talking halacha? Does it say kasher in lener?
Yeah.
What's the language? Call a yafin kulan yafin lener. Maybe it's just saying good advice. He's saying you want to have a nice light when you light the candle. Shemen is good. They're all shemen is good. And shemen zayis is even better. It's good to know that if you want to have a strong, then you have discussion. No, you don't buy it. All right, I guess you don't have to buy it. But I see where it's coming from, because it does answer a couple things. First of all, like that whole question on Rashi, and oh, that it will last longer. Well, who cares if it'll last longer? Again, why don't we say that halachically, just get as much shemen as you need to last the right time. And the whole fact that it's not quoted the halacha seems to be that it's basically giving you advice, that the halacha part is that you want a clear light. That's the nicest thing. And the Gemara is telling you that Shemen Zayis is the best. To which the Ramah responds that, okay, but B'zmaneinu, we have good wax candles that can do an effective job. However, he then adds, but there's a mitzvah min hamuvchar to use Shemen Zayis that's doimet to the neis. So he's throwing in a different consideration. That, okay, there's a separate concept from the Kolbo and others that there's an idea of dumya de neis. But as far as what the Gemara is talking about, the Gemara here is saying, really, not that you have to use this method to get a clear light, but you want a clear light. So a clear light you could also get from candles. So it's also just worth noting that if you want to draw on our experience from the Mahadran and the Mahadran and the Mahadran Sugya, so what you have here, I'm coming.
Is it like a hidder thing, or it's like a cute...
Ah, so that's a little relevant to what I'm about to say. But tell me if this addresses what you're asking. That you may recall that when we talked about the whole Mahadran and Mahadran and Mahadran sugya, so we noted that there are really two different types of Mahadran. Right? There's the Kol HaTorah Kula Mahadran, Zeh Keli V'en Ve'ehu. That mitzvah should always be nicer, should always be more impressive, more aesthetically pleasing. And then you have the unique Hidur Min Chanukah that tie in more explicitly to the message. So I think it's worth noting that if that's the case, so here you have two different types of Hidurim being discussed. What the Gemara is talking about is really a Hidur mitzvah in the classical sense, Zekeli Van Veit. And the notion of this strong light, and what will give us the strongest, clearest light, is hither in the classical kolotura kula sense of Zekhe Livi Andei. And that, to that the Rabbah responds that you can get that with wax candles too, and maybe even better, who knows, maybe you'll have very effective wax candles that'll do a better job. And then there's also an idea of Dumi Dines, so that idea that should be a mitzvah and a mufka, that's really more in the general, nicer, say it differently, that's really more in the sense of Hanukkah's message being expressed more absolutely. Sometimes we find language, mitzvah and a mufka, are used generally, that we don't mean the mitzvah is nicer, you mean that you're fulfilling more aspects of it, you're maybe addressing more shittos. So for example, in other areas of halacha, you find mitzvah and a mufka used if you're going to do something in a sense that ties in more to its tam, more to its reason, more to its essence. So maybe that's what's going on here, that there is a hiddur mitzvah in the classical sense of using a clear light. And Dumya Dines, that's a nice idea which could be called mitzvah namuvcha. And it's closer to the Mahadrim and the Mahadrin of Tosfos that we talked about in that time, that you should have a clear message in terms of how many knights are being represented, etc. Remember, at that time, we talked about the Rambam and Tosfos representing two different models of Hiddur. So maybe you find these two different models of Hiddur here as well. Is it the general thing should be nicer, or a closer match to the message of Hanukkah? So if that's the case, so then it may also come out that if you have to choose between one or the other, which one's more important? It's probably the one that's mentioned in the Gemara for a couple of reasons. The clearer light probably is the focus, because first of all, it's mentioned in the Gemara, even if it's not in a halachic context. But also, it's the standard hiddur mitzvah we find b'chol Torah kula, that anything that makes a mitzvah nicer, more impressive, is a hiddur mitzvah. So then, presumably, that has a stronger grounding in halacha as a requirement. While when it comes to the idea of dumya dines, so then one would probably guess that that's a little bit less important or less grounded, because it's not a classical type of hiddur mitzvah you can figure out on your own. And it's not based on the Gemara either. So it's not a specific takana of Chazal to do it this way. Maybe there's a svara to do it. But if you have to choose between the two, it seems that from a source perspective and from a logical perspective, that the clear light idea would be more important than the dumya de shemun minaru idea. I should mention that, I think I mentioned in the past, that the Shaar HaTzion quotes, the Caleb quote, that the Maharal of Prague, who wrote a sefer on Hanukkah and Ner Mitzvah, so he took the view that one is not allowed to use wax candles at all, and that because of Dumi Dines, that he thinks that Davka has to be Shemin, Shemin Zayas, in order to fulfill the mitzvah. But as the Machzta Shekel points out, Machzta Shekel is a commentary in Magen Avraham, as Machzta Shekel points out, the minhag seems to not be that way. We don't have that preference. And again, I think that's consistent with what I just said, but if you have to choose between these two values, if it's true that the wax will give you a better light, then maybe it should be more important than the Dumi Dines to consideration. And in any event, in terms of whether it's acceptable or not, it seems to be easier to understand that it should be acceptable. Amir, a question about that?
Yeah, or more like a comment. So, I mean, this issue stretches over all of this stuff. I mean, like, we have better ways of doing mitzvot nowadays than we did 2,000 years ago, or 1,000 years ago.
Some of them.
Or 100 years ago.
Some of them.
Yeah, some of them. But, you know, in terms of like an esrog or something.
Well, do we have a better way of doing an esrog now?
Well, I mean, in terms of the in terms of the quality. So, like, do you say
is that true?
Do the standards of hiddur go up?
Standards of hiddur could have some subjectivity to that.
Like, let's say wine. I don't know. You know, like, we're talking about the brightness of the candle. What if, you know, wine wasn't as sweet 100 years ago, and now it's, you know, much sweeter for whatever reasons? Can you use it for? I mean, maybe it's different because
I think you have to think a little bit if you can think of a good example, because it's not
you
so
see
easy.
What I'm trying to get.
Not 100%. I do and I don't, because I hear what you're saying, but I think that to get a specific example is going to be harder than it sounds.
How about tzitzit. So you have, you have wool, but then you, so you can fulfill the mitzvah through wool. Mm-hmm. Then you have polyester. So okay. Is that is that the same?
But how does that enter into the question of it being better one way or another?
I guess polyester.
I think I have to think hard to find an example. I think it's not as an easy an example to come up with as it might seem. So
polyester is more comfortable. I don't know.
That's certainly not part of them as well.
It's not
so, yeah, so it's hard to nail down an example. So you have to think about that a little bit. But so it seems that I think this would be the case that despite the Maharal's position, like the Master Shekel points out, the minhag has not been that way. It does seem to be that there's certainly a basis to use the wax candles, and possibly even a preference depending on how, and that this consideration of the clear light, if they should be in conflict, seems to be much more significant than the issue of Dom le Menorah that was brought up later. Okay, so I should also mention this context. We mentioned it before. The previous daf, when we were talking about Gizrei Mitzvah, but we just re-mentioned it here because it ties into this. So in the poskim on the side of the Shulchan Aruch, they quote the Machlokas, the Shvos Yaakov, and the Chacham Tzvi, that we mentioned in that context, about if one is using wax candles, and then oil becomes available under the assumption that it is preferable, should one take down his wax candles and then put up oil instead, under the assumption that that was a clash between the Gizrei Mitzvah that would be involved in taking down the candles, and the Hidr Mitzvah that would be involved by using the oil. So a little bit of Chazar, if you remember we talked about this in the Bizoy Mitzvah Sugya. So the Shvos Yaakov was of the position that it would be a Bizoy Mitzvah, that you shouldn't take down the wax candles. And the Chacham Tzvi thought that it was the Hidr Mitzvah that overrode the situation. And the Shvos Yaakov responded in Chelek Beis, and this is brought in the commentaries on the side of the Shulchan Aruch. So just we'll mention it again in the context of talking about this preference and to what extent it applies. Okay, so this gets us now on the precipice of the sugya of bracha and the issue of dinim d'rabbanan. So we're not going to have enough time to go into a detail. We'll just maybe lay out what some of the issues are and mention one shorter point, and then we'll talk about it at greater length next time. But the Gemara raises the question. First, the Gemara tells us, Chav Gimel Mar Aleph here, next sugya, that Amar Rav Madlik near Shulchanik Atzarech Levarech, you have to make a bracha, and then the Gemara goes on to explain that the Gemara sticks in the din of Haroah. We'll have to come back to that separately. But then the Gemara talks about what the brachos are, and essentially tells us that there are three brachos that are recited, and the most relevant of which, the Berchas HaMitzvah, has Asher Kiddushana B'Mitzvoso V'Tzivanu. So the Gemara asks, Heichan Tzivanu. That if we're going to say God commanded us to do this, so that sounds like it's a commandment from the Torah, so where indeed is it in the Torah? So that's something we'll have to talk about. That's a whole discussion. Gemara has a response, but it's a part of a major machlokas that affects really Kol Torah Kula. So we'll, did anyone get up to the Mar Makomos that talks about this again? All right, so then especially we'll leave that until we have a chance to see that a little bit. And but then the other major issue that we'll also have to talk about is this a Berchas HaMitzvah in the classical sense? Or, as we've seen some indications so far, is it possibly more than your standard Berchas HaMitzvah? And might that have some nafkaminas? Again, that's something we've seen a little bit, and we'll see a little bit more how the brachos here play a role. So I'll just mention one brief point here, that really what is the bracha? So it's not really so clear that the Shulchan Aruch has language that the bracha, aside from the Asher Kiddushana Mitzvos of Tzivano part, but what comes next? So if you look at the Shulchan Aruch, it says, Lahadlik Ner Chanukah. And the Mishnah Berurah says that our minhag is to say a little differently, Lahadlik Ner Shel Chanukah. And the Maharshal has an interesting thing. He says you should say it as one word, Shel Chanukah, as if it's one breath. You shouldn't take a breath between them. But not that you might think, as they point out, you might think, okay, so say it as with a Shva, Shel Chanukah, that is to Chanukah. No, we still want you to say Shulchanukah, but say it like it's one word. So this whole discussion is very unusual. You don't find this by Shabbos. We say, L'hadlik ner shel Shabbos. So in the Sefer Ner Yisrael that we've mentioned a few times, he suggests, he thinks this is relevant to the position of the Avnei Nezer, which we've mentioned a few times as well. That if you remember, the Avnei Nezer had this possible chiddush. I say possible because it's quoted always as if this is his position, and we looked more carefully that in the tshuva he does not actually conclude with a firm stance. He just discusses it as a possibility that when it comes to menorah, the kli is crucial. That when it comes to Ner Chanukah, there is actually a din of a kli, that if one were to take a wax candle and melt the bottom and just stick it on the windowsill, that would not be enough, that maybe you actually have a halacha of a holder. So if that's true, so it comes out that the holder, the word Ner, when it comes to Chanukah, doesn't just mean the light itself, but refers to the holder and everything together as one package. And all of that is ma'akev, according to this position. All of that is crucial for the mitzvah. So if that's true, so then that means that as distinct from Shabbos, when it comes to Chanukah, there is a halacha of Ner Shel Chanukah specifically, and a focus on that is the Heftah Shel Mitzvah. And that's why perhaps we have this discussion of how exactly the bracha should represent that. Okay, so we'll dive mincha in a minute, but just a quickly review what we spoke about. So we went back to the Din of Ach Sinai and focused on two major points. The question of what is the Chiddush of Ach Sinai is represented by whether it could extend the Teshtafas Mefruta concept to two roommates. We saw it seemed to be a Machlokas HaPoskim, whether that works or not. And maybe it connects the question of Chovas HaBayis, Chovas HaGavra, which is perhaps a Machlokas the Rosh and the Ran, and could perhaps also explain the issue of whether the Ach Sinai has an option of lighting on his own, a Machlokas apparently between the Torah and the Rambam. And that could also be the issue between the Rambam and the Ramah in terms of how the Mahadran and the Mahadran and the Mahadran works. And then the question of what are you mishtatef in? You mishtatef in the shemen, mishtatef in the house, various questions with both. The Rishonim all seem to talk about shemen, but how does that work if Moses and Kodos talked about all that? We mentioned the position that many held, that it's hishtatfus in the property of the house, the real estate, something like that. And we suggested a little bit differently that one is already considered perhaps connected to the household in which he's staying, but not with any kvias, that therefore it's not evident that the lighting there should be his. So he's got to do something in order to claim his right to light it in that house, and maybe that's what the Hishtatfus Bepruta represents because of his lack of kvias there. And then we talked about the sugya about the Mufchar status given to Shemen Zayis, and the fact that the Gemara says it's Mufchar because it has a clearer light. But that's not brought by any of the poskim. And the Ramah, who does mention Mufchar, says you could use wax also because that's got a clear light. But there's a Mufchar issue for Shemen, which is based on the Kolbo, not based on the Gemara. And the Mishnah Berurah says because it's Zechu Neis. So we saw here that there's two different issues going on. That the Mufchar, the clearer light, the Gemara seems to say as a recommendation, just a fact that this is going to have clear light. And to that, the poskim say, well, we're not going to bring this lavacha because it's not a din. And Ramah says that wax could be just as good. So there's a separate idea of Zeichel Neis, which is not based on the Gemara. And we saw that that could represent two different types of hidurim, the hidur in the classical sense of the Keli Ve'enveyu, and the Mitzvah Mufchar or Hanukkah specific idea of being Domel and Neis. And that if that's the case, it would seem that both because it's in the Gemara and because it connects to the broader concept, that preference should be given to the hiddur of a clear light. And it's also the fact that the Maharal was quoted as saying that you can't use wax, but the minhag seems to be not like that. And we discussed also the machlokas, the chacham tzvi, and Shlosh Yaakov. But if you take down your wax candles to replace them with oil, it becomes available, and that whole discussion. And then we started this whole gemara about what bracha should you make, and the fact that you make a bracha at all, and the whole issue of Asher Kishon Yisrael Tzivivaru. And we saw that the bracha itself is somewhat of a discussion. The Shulchan Aruch says, Ner Chanukah. The minhag Mishnah Berurah says, is Ner Shal Chanukah. And of course, the Marshal, the Shal Chanukah should be one word. And we mentioned the suggestion that since the Avnezer may have proven the fact that when it comes to Chanukah, Ner refers to the whole Chavtza and it all becomes a part of the mitzvah, so therefore maybe there is a greater Chiyuv to focus on the candle as opposed to Ner Shel Shabbos, and that's why there are some differences. Okay, we'll stop there. If anyone want to dive for us? Okay.